you're a merchant and you get an apple barrel and a few of the apples are bad, it would be silly to throw away all the apples. That would be a total loss on your investment. So you pick out the bad ones and throw those away and rinse off any slime that the bad ones left on the good ones so you can get on with the business of selling good apples. But what would a merchant do if the whole barrel was bad and there weren't any good apples to be sorted out from it? Sell the whole thing.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message. You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
And again, good morning. Back in the day when I was being raised, my mother was fond of idioms. She had one for every occasion. Some of the ones that I remember will be familiar to you. A stitch in time saves 9. Very good. Don't judge another person until you have walked mile in their shoes. Penny saved is, and then this one that, in my memory at least, judged by the number of times she said it, was my mother's second favorite idiom. I'll come in a little bit to her first favorite, but her second favorite idiom appeared to have been, one bad apple don't, and I heard some people say bunch. Bananas come in bunches, not apples. I know they changed that letter. It was barrels. Barrels! One bad apple don't spoil the whole barrel. Of course, even when I was a kid, it had been a while since they actually delivered apples in barrels. Back then, they still brought grapes to the little grocery store in our community in little slat wood boxes because grapes are easy to squish. But apples came in cardboard boxes. Still, I understood the gist of it. When Mom said, one bad apple don't spoil the whole barrel, she wasn't really talking about apples at all. She meant that if I had a bad experience with one teacher, I should not assume that all teachers were bad. That one teacher was maybe just a bad apple. Lots of good apples still in the barrel. Don't drop out of school because you had a bad experience with one teacher. If you have a bad experience with one girl, do not assume that all girls are bad. I continue to struggle with that one. There's two people I've got to apologize to after the service. Don't run off and join the Foreign Legion because you had a bad experience with one girl. She was just a bad apple. You have a bad experience with one employer. Don't assume that all employers are bad. Don't scoot off to Key West and become a beachcomber for the rest of your life. Largely on the basis of the one apple idiom, by the time I was in my early teens, I had pretty much given up on the notions of dropping out of school, joining the Foreign Legion, or fleeing to Key West. Or maybe it was because where the strength of my mother's second favorite idiom ran out, the strength of her first favorite idiom picked up. Spare the rod! My mother did not believe in spoiling the child. Hold on to all that for a moment. Today will be the last installment of my project for a little while to preach all 150 Psalms. We'll come back to that sometime. Today we're up to Psalm 53. 53. I'll tell you an interesting thing about Psalm 53. It is almost identical to Psalm 14. If you was to open up your Bible to Psalm 14 and put a thumb there and then flip over to Psalm 53 and just shift back and forth and read them word by word, verse by verse together, you would see that I'm telling you the truth. They are so much alike as to really only be one composition repeated. The only real substantial difference in thought that I can detect is that 53:5 seems to be talking about despite for the enemy, where 14:6 seems to be talking about despite for the poor. But the rest of it, just the same. And modern songwriters sometimes change song a little bit, that much, to fit a particular occasion. I preached from Psalm 14 back in August of 2012. The title of that sermon was The Hollow Man, and I was concentrating almost exclusively on the proper definition of the word we translate as fool in the first verse, what that means, and what kind of fools we are after all the experience we had in the 20th century that we continue to keep putting hollow men in charge of everything. But this sermon will not be that sermon, even though the two psalms are, for all practical purposes, identical. I'm going to focus on another idea contained in David's words. Back now to my mother's idiomatic wisdom, one bad apple don't spoil the whole barrel. The idiom is actually expressed from the merchant's point of view. The rest of us don't get apples in barrels. But if you're a merchant and you get an apple barrel, and a few of the apples are bad, it would be silly to throw away all the apples. That would be a total loss on your investment. So you pick out the bad ones and throw those away and rinse off any slime that the bad ones left on the good ones so you can get on with the business of selling good apples. But what would a merchant do if the whole barrel was bad and there weren't any good apples to be sorted out from it? Sell the whole thing to a local hog farmer at a loss? Bottle your own apple cider vinegar. Write it off on your taxes. Some combination of those things or others might all be good business. But understanding the whole barrel as being bad raises the question from God's point of view. David says, God looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand, that did seek God. Every one of them is gone back. They're altogether become filthy, and there is none that doeth good. No, not one. What a far stretch from God's initial pronouncement about the things that he had made. When just shortly after the creation, God looked down upon all that he had done, the first thing that he had to say about it was, "This is very good." And boy, we understand that. We look around today, even at the creation as we have come to know it, and I at least still think that it's pretty cool. The sun, the moon, the stars, the oceans, the lakes, the rivers, the mountains, the valleys, the plains, the trees, the shrubs, the grasses, the wind, the rain. Some days I can even find a place in my heart for the snow. Not today. As we come to a rudimentary understanding of such things, how wonderful are time and space themselves. The whole of creation is almost incomprehensibly wonderful, but I want to assure you that the reality that we see today stinks compared to the face of the reality upon which God looked when he said, "This is very good." If we could see it the way that he made it, before the descent of the curse, before the ravage of the flood, before all the other damage that we have wrought ourselves, if we could know it the way it was when Adam and Eve first walked in the creation, we would have no words. And we lose track of the fact that we were part of that creation that God called good. We were good. We were good. Untouched by sin. Corruption unknown. We had a purpose. And in our goodness, we were free to pursue that purpose. Our purpose was to walk with God, to enjoy fellowship with Him, to come always to a deeper, broader understanding of His will, to learn to love Him more. We were created for this. And in our sin-imposed separation from God, we become the most fallen things in a creation that is actually fallen for our sake. Now, there have been moments after the fall when it might be said that God reached down and snatched a good apple from the barrel. Enoch comes to mind, as we are told in Genesis 5:24, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not. God took him. Whatever you think of that, even in those days, three generations before the flood of Noah, Enoch would be the rare exception to the rule. And by the time of Noah, God looked down and found that man needed to be wiped out almost entirely. One man still found favor in the sight of God. And now by the time of David, David says God looks down from heaven and he finds no good apples. The whole barrel gone bad. I think it's important to note here that David does not exempt himself. He does not say God looks down and finds that I'm the only one. I seek him. And the rest of you. No, David, as pretty honest assessment of himself, he knows that in the past he has done things that were destructive to other people and contrary to the will of God. He knows that in the future he will do them again. He knows that God doesn't want him to, but he knows that he will. Just as if what God wanted somehow did not matter. He will do these sinful, selfish . He counts himself a bad apple among a barrel full. This psalm, or technically the two, since 14 and 53 are practically identical, not among the better known psalms, but is a very important one. If you read your New Testament, several of the psalms are quoted in the New Testament. Not all 150 by any means, but several. Most of the ones that are quoted get a quick quotation, a thought expressed, and then move on. But just a very few become the subject of an important passage in the New Testament. That is to say that some passages in the New Testament are actually, on one face of it, commentary on the thought of some of the Psalms. Not very many, but a few. Psalm 53, or 14, whichever number you want to pick, is one of those. Because the third chapter of Romans is a commentary on these thoughts of David's. And we who have the opportunity should really never read Psalm 53 without also reading Romans 3. The Apostle Paul quotes liberally from David, for instance, verses 10 to 12 in Romans 3, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good. No, not one. He said, as it is written, recognize his source material. Launching from David's thought, Paul goes on to describe what it looks like when everybody has gone back from the purpose of our creation, how our throats become like open graves issuing deceit and poison, and how our feet become increasingly swift to shed blood, and misery and destruction stand like milestones along the path that we trod, and how there is and can be no peace, and all because we fail to know God. We're not even trying to know Him, for all have sinned and fallen short of His glory. It is not a pretty picture. And like David before him, Paul does not exempt himself. He's not trying to say, I, Paul, am righteous and everyone else has left the way. Paul knows that his own feet have been pretty swift to shed blood on occasions, and he has created more than his share of the sum total of misery and destruction. He knows himself to be one more bad apple in a barrel full. So all that said, I have a great idea for a new party game. Are you ready? Bobbing for rotten apples. And when you finish bobbing, we can move to a new snack. Caramel rotten apples. You know that trick where the juggler is, he's got the apples, and every time this one apple comes to his right, he takes a bite of it and keeps going until he eats. Wouldn't that be entertaining if that apple was rotten? An apple for the teacher would take on a whole new meaning if it looked like that. And since we began with idiomatic expression, a rotten apple a day accomplishes something. Yeah. If all apples were rotten, if all apples were rotten, we would just not do apple-oriented activities. And the history of idiomatic expression would be much altered. But this is the position in which we have placed God. We have all together gone back. We have become filthy and unprofitable workers of abominable iniquity. I read several versions in studying for the sermon. The version of the Bible simply entitled God's Word translates the one thought this way: we are rotten to the core. It isn't like you can just trim away a couple of bad spots and get down to the good. So why should God bother if there aren't any good apples to be had? What should God do? Yet David dared to hope, oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion. When God bringeth back someday, when He does it, when God bringeth back the captivity of His people, Jacob shall rejoice, and Israel shall be glad. And here, Paul's commentary on David's thought becomes even more crucial. Romans 3:21-2. But now the righteousness of God without the law is manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God which is by faith of Jesus Christ unto all and upon all them that believe. David hoped that salvation would come from Zion someday. Paul confidently asserted that it had arrived. Because God looked down on a barrel full of rotten apples, and because He is God, exercised an option not available to anyone else, God can turn rotten apples good. And He does it through Jesus Christ, whose righteousness settles unto and upon all them that believe. See, here's the unfortunate truth. You are a bad apple. But Jesus Christ justifies you by his blood. And then he begins the power of transforming you by his Spirit. And the bruises and the cuts fade away. And the watery squishiness begins to recover a crisp firmness. And the wrinkles are smoothed out by the growing of the fullness of righteousness. And ugly brown shades tend toward red. And the sickly stench of decay is displaced by the growing bouquet of freshness. The whole barrel has, despite the idiom, gone bad. But all is not lost, because God makes bad apples whole. If you have not asked for him to do this for you yet, here's your opportunity. If you would stand, we'll be using as our hymn of invitation number 109. We'll use the first, second, and the fourth stanzas.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.